temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer? A beach bum summer? Or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
Yes, the sweet sounds that bring in one Ray Fittipaldo. Everybody loves Raymond. He's on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can get involved on the text line as well, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you, unless we get money for you, I should say. All right, let's get to this, Ray, and I trust you're doing well. Ramondre Stevenson signs a long-term deal, 4 years, $36 million, including $17 million fully guaranteed. Should we be relating this to Najee Harris?
I mean, guys, that is very steep for a running back contract. I mean, you know, Stevenson is an okay player, but he re-signed with the Patriots, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so where are the Patriots going that they need a running back? They need to pay a running back $9 million a year. To me, that kind of reeks of Steelers drafting Najee Harris in the first place. I mean, to me, it's even worse because you're paying him when your team has no shot of winning within the next couple of years. So good for Stevenson, but I don't know if that's going to have a direct bearing on any Najee Harris contract or any other contract. I think that's a bad contract, to be honest with you.
But won't Najee use that as a benchmark?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's even less likely that he re-signs with the Steelers now. I mean, that's just like the Justin Jefferson contract, right? I mean, that's going to affect Brandon Ayuk and DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel. You know, it's just the way the economics of the NFL work. But there also are outlier contracts, and I would argue that Stevenson is going to be an outlier contract. And I would even argue that Justin Jefferson in the end is going to be an outlier contract as well.
Well, I think the thing about it is, though, if that's what he's getting, do you think, so when you say outlier contract, the other teams will probably at times just be able to say, well, that's what they did, but that's not what we're doing.
Yeah.
And most teams are not going to go that route for a running back. Especially when, you know, I think he's good, but I don't know he's that good.
Yeah, listen, I don't have over the cap or spot track in front of me, but Stevenson signing for $9 million a season. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like when it, you know, if there's any phony years on the back end of that. But $9 million a year for a running back of his caliber, I mean, that's probably already top five, top seven in the NFL. And, again, I think he's a solid player, but paying that guy on a team like that when there's really no hope of competing for a playoff spot, you know, to me, that's not a good contract.
Ray Fittipaldo of the Post-Gazette. This is great, I thought, and it got me thinking, both Paul and Ray, is Mike Greenberg on ESPN. He asked this question. He said, I believe if you gave the Steelers truth serum, they would never admit this, nor should they. But if they had known at the time that they were going to be able to get Justin Fields for the price they got him for, I don't think they would have signed Russell Wilson in the first place. So in other words, Ray, if they knew Justin Fields was going to come this cheaply, did they ever sign? Did I say Justin Fields? Yeah. Did they sign Russell Wilson?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Omar was keeping in touch with Ryan Poles from the end of the season until whenever that deal was made. So I can't imagine that, you know, a week or two passed and Ryan Poles said, okay, it's a first round pick and now it's a sixth round pick. So I think Russell Wilson was their guy. By now we all know how that story unfolded, right? You know, there was a minority owner with the Steelers who had a connection to Russell Wilson. So kind of brokered that deal and got him in there for the vet minimum. To me, on a one-year shot, that's a great deal. You know, I think the reason Justin Fields is here is because Kenny Pickett won it out. And once Kenny Pickett won it out, you needed to get a viable backup in here because you have a 36-year-old quarterback in Russell Wilson who, you know, you never know with injuries. You got to have somebody behind him. So, you know, to me, that's that story. I don't know where Greeny was getting that or what he based his theory on, but I am quite sure Omar and Ryan Poles were in conversations weekly, biweekly, monthly, and I can't imagine that they were floored when they can find out when they found out they can get him for a six-round pick. I just don't believe that.
Well, yeah, and they watched the price go down and everything else. We would be remiss. We're already about 3 or 4 minutes into this interview and didn't mention Brandon Ayuk. First of all, is this far more of a talk show and you know, and or columnist talking point than reality, Ray? Like, is there any, do you feel like there's any real substance to this, or is this just like the pipe dreams of people who are, you know, who want the Steelers to make a splash move?
Yeah. Now, listen, there are legs to this. I had a source within the team tell me this back in March, that this was a thing, that there was some interest in Brandon Ayuk. But again, guys, I mean, it's, you know, we're now 4 months, what, 3.5, 4 months past the new league year in the middle of March, and it still hasn't gotten done. So, you know, I think if you're the Steelers and Omar Khan, you sit back, you're patient, you see how far Brandon Ayuk wants to be. You know, is he going to be ultra difficult with the 49ers? Are the 49ers going to want to be rid of that problem? And then at that point, does the price go down? As we get closer to the season, you know, if the 49ers are asking for a one for Brandon Ayuk, as you get closer to the season and things potentially become more untenable, then does the price go down? And is that when Omar Khan pounces? But yeah, to answer your question, I think it's more than a talk show type of a thing. You know, I was told it was, you know, there was some real interest on both sides, you know, 4 months ago. It hasn't happened yet, but that doesn't mean it won't happen before the start of the season.
Yeah, I think the important things that we don't know are still to happen. One, what is Ayuk going to do when training camp opens? How does this all unfold? Because nothing that's happened until now matters. Like, is he going to cause trouble? Two, is there going to be a receiver injury somewhere around the league where someone's going to get desperate and pay a really high? If you're John Lynch, you've no reason. You had no reason to make this trade yet. None. But as time goes on, you know, at some point, you're either going to have to say, listen, we're going to keep him and Debo through the season, or we're not. And I know Michael Silver out there, who covers them and has been for a long time, He gives this credibility. It's obvious. Ayuk and Debo Samuel are not going to be there beyond this year. One of them's going after this year, so therefore one of them could go before this year. They drafted a receiver in the first round. They signed one of their own receivers, and both guys are going to command big money. Stuff's happening in San Francisco, Ray. Something's going to happen here, although it might not till the end of the year. Right?
Well, do you? I mean, if you're the 49ers, you're competing for a Super Bowl, but isn't it a bit of a luxury to have Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, whom you just signed, and then Ricky Pearsall, your first-round draft pick? Let's face it, Ricky Pearsall is going to be a big part of that offense as well. I can't imagine he would be anything less than a number three receiver.
Yeah, not to mention George Kittle's your tight end, and McCaffrey catches balls out of the backfield. So let me ask both of you then. I mean, this is coming down to this, I think. Are the Steelers or some other team willing to part with their first-round pick next year for Ayuk? Would you, guys?
Yeah.
Would you, Paul?
No.
Would you, Ray?
No, I would not.
I would, and here's why. I used the same rationale when they traded a first-rounder for Minkah. I simply said, just pretend Minkah Fitzpatrick is your first-round pick next year, and I'd say the same thing about Ayuk. Just pretend the Steelers are going to walk to the podium next year and say, with our first-round pick, we just took wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. Now, the catch is you have to pay him like a free agent. I get that. But I'm all for it. He's 26.
I mean, that's my point, Joe. You acquired Minkah Fitzpatrick 1 year into his career. You had 3 years remaining on his rookie contract, and you picked up the option before you had to pay him. With Ayuk, you know, it's pretty much going to be a sign and trade. They would have an agreed upon number in place, I would think.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to trade a first. They're, you know, they would have to know, okay, we're going to pay this guy 28, 29 million, 30 million, whatever that number is. Your point is good, but there's a significant difference there between having Minka on a rookie deal for 3 to 4 more years and then acquiring Ayuk, who's up after this year.
But you did know that someday in the pretty near future, you're going to have to pay Minka big money. There was still a huge contract out there for Minka. It just wasn't immediate.
Or he was going to not play so well for 2 years and you just would never have to pay him.
That's true, but here's the thing about making your first round pick, in quotes, a guy that you already know is good. He was already good as rookie. Ayuk's already a star, so you're not taking a risk with your, quote, first round pick.
But isn't he on his last year of his deal?
Yeah. Ayuk?
Ayuk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listen, dog.
So what you're saying, they pick up, did San Francisco pick up the, he wasn't a first round pick, was he?
Yeah, he was. They picked up his option.
Okay, so there's one more year after this that's under control, correct? Is this the fifth year option?
No, this is the fifth year option year.
Okay, well then, yeah. So you wouldn't.
It's going to be a sign and trade. Yeah.
I was just very confused. I got you now. So, but my thing is, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't you just sign him yourself as a free agent? Unless they try and franchise him or something.
Well, then you got all kinds of competition. That's the thing. Here you have him.
True.
You could hold out and wait for that. Plus, you want him this year.
Yeah. I mean, I see, my thing with Ayuk, I think he's good. But I don't, I think, I mean, Ray, I mean, you study these things a lot closer than I do. How much of it is him and how much of it is the scheme that he plays in?
Well, that's what you have to figure out. I mean, that 49ers offense can make, I mean, what was the name of that running back? Raheem Mostert. I mean, that guy was awesome in that system before they acquired McCaffrey. I mean, I get it, but I think you also, the guy was a first round pick. There's pedigree there. I think he would be good in any system. But there would be that unknown. I mean, I'm with you, Paul. Anytime you go from an offense that's, you know, regarded as one of the best in the NFL to kind of an unknown situation with Arthur Smith in his first year, uncertain quarterback situation, yeah, for sure, there's a little bit of risk there. But I think Brandon Ayuk, you know, I think he's a top 10, top 15 receiver in the league. I think, you know, the way the salary cap is now, guys, you got to pay guys. I think – a year or two from now, $30 million a year for a receiver won't be that big of a deal. But it's a big deal now. It's a big number. I think that's why some teams are maybe shying away.
Couple Pirates-related items here. Call now to win two tickets to the Pirates game July 5th at PNC Park at 6:40 p.m. Join us for Bucko Luau that weekend. Enjoy some fun baseball in the sun all weekend long. Plus, you get to talk to IT when you call in here. Intern Trent, which is a treat for anybody. 412-928-9370, caller number 4, gets those tickets. Plus, the fan and the Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball softball showcase. Parents, coaches, email us at usports@937thefan.com to register your 12 and under team, and 937 The Fan may make a stop to your field. Details at 937thefan.com, Century 21 Fairways Real Estate. Ray, you made national news the other day. The headline on SteelersDepot.com, Fittipaldo. The knocks against Justin Fields, quote, turned out to be true during spring practices. You may have even said that on this. No, that was via Sirius XM radio. What did you mean by that?
I mean, simply, and I think I have said it on 93.7 airwaves as well, is, you know, the knocks against Justin Fields coming in, a lot of it was his accuracy. Can he put the ball where it needs to go on a consistent basis? And just from observing and talking to people in that building, that was a little bit of an issue. But I wouldn't make it a big deal in May and June, guys. I think you have to remember, number one, he's coming in, he's with a new team, He's with a new OC. He's with a new quarterbacks coach. They're probably trying to tinker with his game a little bit before they throw him out there in July. So I think that might be one aspect of it. But if you're asking me who was the more accurate quarterback this spring, was it Russell Wilson or Justin Fields? It was Russell Wilson.
So you wouldn't go as far as Shady McCoy, who the other day said, flat out, Fields is not a good quarterback. That's what he said. He said he's not a good quarterback, period. You don't want him reading defenses. You don't want him throwing the ball a lot. That's what Shady said, Paul.
Yeah.
Ray, you wouldn't go that far, it sounds like.
I mean, I want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I want to see what he does in a different system. I mean, he had a couple of OCs, a couple of quarterbacks coaches in Chicago. Let's give the guy a chance. But, I mean, guys, before they acquired him for a six-round pick, okay, you had, what, was he 10 and 38 with the Bears, low completion percentage, and there was that knock, about his ability to read defenses. I mean, there was stuff out there before he got to Pittsburgh, but I am willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I want to see him, you know, for a full 5-6 weeks in training camp before I make any determinations on whether he's good or not.
It is kind of interesting. All of the observations that we've heard have come in what we call football and underwear. Right? Basically, right? To this point, for the last, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, all of the observations we've had have come out of football and underwear. So you're right. Watching him in training camp at least gives us a better – watching the exhibition games, I know they're not the exact thing of regular season games, but at least guys are playing in pads. And at least there are guys that are trying to make teams, so they're trying to make plays, you know what I mean? So it's not like they're going three-quarter speed like it's the Pro Bowl. But I do think that it's going to be just kind of – this is probably the most anticipated Steeler season I can remember, for me at least, in a long, long time. I mean, I can't remember the last time I was this – eager for the season to begin, to see what it all looks like, you know, the quarterbacks, the new offense, what the, you know, receiving core actually looks like, the rebuilt inside linebacker group. I mean, there's a lot about this team, Ray, that's intriguing, isn't there?
Yeah. Listen, Paul, is it a bad thing if your backup quarterback has a diverse skill set and, that he's different from your starter? I mean, I think that could be a good thing. I think, you know, if it comes to the point where there's an injury and Justin Fields has to go in, maybe Arthur Smith creates an offense around Justin Fields. I mean, we saw the Ravens do that with Lamar Jackson in the middle of a season. You went from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, and the Ravens make up, like, what, 3.5-4 games on the Steelers and end up making the playoffs that year. So maybe it's just the point where, you know, Justin Fields could be a good quarterback, but maybe he has to have things created around him for that to happen. But again, I think he's fine as a backup. I want to see him play. And I agree with you, Paul. This training camp is probably the most anticipated training camp, for me at least, since they came off their last Super Bowl appearance, in terms of camp battles, storylines, things like that. This is very much anticipated here coming up in a few weeks.
Well, speaking of that, we have a clip here from Stink, Mark Schlereth. You're familiar with him, Ray?
I am, yes.
I believe he coins a great term here called toxic positivity. And he accuses Russell Wilson of toxic positivity, Paul, in this quote right here. Let's take a listen, Ray, and then I'll throw it to you for a reaction. Is this on Stink's podcast, City Limits?
It's the Stinkin' Truth Podcast with Mark Schlereth.
That's one of the great podcast names in the country. The Stinkin' Truth. Here we go, former Broncos lineman.
I think when you're delusional.
Delusional, huh?
Russ
is delusional.
I think when you're delusional, you can point the finger at 8 million different places that say, this is why this happened. This is why. You know, that toxic positivity and that and surrounding yourself with people that basically, it's not your fault, man. They didn't put you in that. And that, like, so when you're, you know, and that's, I mean, that is not that's not even derogatory. That's just a fact.
Thoughts, Ray? And I can't get over that term, toxic positivity.
Yeah, that's a new one. I mean, listen, I didn't Chad Brown, former Steeler, who's based in Denver now, I think I've heard similar things from them about his personality. I will tell you this, just being around Russell Wilson for, you know, the last 5-6 weeks, just seeing him interact, there is a difference. And I'm not saying it's a difference between their personalities with Kenny Pickett and Russell Wilson. I just think there's something to having a veteran who's been there and done that in that room, commanding the huddle, commanding that locker room. So will it be good or bad? I know it went south in Denver. I can't predict the future here in Pittsburgh. But I think, you know, if you're asking me to compare and contrast Russell Wilson to Kenny Pickett, I think it's going to be better.
Here's the thing. Let's just get to the point here. Because I've had Chad Brown here. You just heard Schlereth. People look at, and I've never met him, so I don't know. But people who have been with Russell Wilson, some of them, some love him, say there's not a person. It's not like a real person there. There's no. There's just this guy, like a politician, you know, spouting things, spouting, you know, cliches and affirmations, and nothing's ever wrong. And they're like, wake up. Yeah, that's why he called him delusional. Did you sense any of that, like, hello, are you a person type thing?
I didn't. That would be hard for me to glean in just 1 month or so. But I will stick to it. I think there's a reason the Steelers went from Kenny Pickett to Russell Wilson. And I think in the end, all this stuff from Denver. I mean, do you want to listen to...
But it's from Seattle too, Ray.
I know, players turned analyst, or do you want to listen to teammates? I'm not saying it's going to be a perfect situation, Joe. I'm just saying that based on the Steelers quarterback situation, it's not like they're going from prime Ben to Russell Wilson. They're going from Kenny Pickett to Russell Wilson. It's got to be better, doesn't it?
I mean, here's my problem with all of that. Can I just say what I've been, you know, listening to? This has been a very good back and forth. Okay. And I think I said this a few weeks ago. I might even have to write a column about it. Do people forget how good Russell Wilson was for about 10 years or 11 years or whatever it was? Like, I get it that there's, you know, we've got hot take shows all over the, you know, you can just turn them on all day long. You can do the hot take, right? So everybody's in podcasts and everybody's got to say crazy things. But I have a hard time believing that Russell Wilson, like, that he's all these things that we keep hearing from, you know, a select few people, that he would have been able to be as successful as he could have been, as he was. That's all I'm saying.
Can I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me is that reputation that I just talked about, that a lot of people, like, this is a plastic man. There's right. No real, you know, or a prima donna. The way that he built his career is completely the opposite of that. Like, he is a blood and guts third round pick who worked his way up against the odds and played quarterback with a style where this guy's willing to take any beating that's out there to get the job done. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
his actual,
I mean,
playing style belies that reputation. It's weird.
That's all I'm saying. Like, maybe fame, maybe, you know, marrying a pop superstar or whatever she is, maybe that turned him into a little bit of a prima donna or whatever. But people need to remember, this guy was really, really good for a lot of his career. Am I wrong about this, Ray?
No, you know, one thing that always struck a chord with me about Russell's tenure in Denver was Sean Payton went out of his way to make things difficult with that relationship. Really put a Super Bowl winning veteran quarterback in places that were just odd for me to see him. You know, the way he talked about him in the media, his body language in games, the yelling on the sidelines. You don't see that every day. And Sean Payton does have a reputation in the NFL of being a guy who's difficult to deal with. So that's another reason I want to give Russell the benefit of the doubt with the Steelers. Sometimes just getting away from, you know, a toxic coach can be a good thing, and you get into maybe a more positive situation. Maybe you can get back to where you were in Seattle. So I just wanted to mention that the whole Sean Payton thing always struck me as odd, the way he treated Russell Wilson.
Yeah, if I'm going to pick a jerk in that relationship, I'm picking Payton every time. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Paul, may I engage Ray in a game of free association?
Absolutely.
Ray, this is a little bit off the beaten path, but we're in the middle of June, okay? So we were talking about corn movies. Not porn movies, corn with a C. I won't get into the details of why this happened, but it turned out that there's a list on a website about the 10 best corn-related movies of all time, and I want your pick. You ready? Children of the Corn, Field of Dreams, The Wicker Man, Signs, Twister, Silkwood, The Corn is Green, or Dark Fields. Any one of those tickle your fancy?
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. Paul hates it. Not moved at all by the father-son at the end. Not moved at all by the ghosts walking out of the cornfield. In fact, he doesn't have no opinion. He hates it. Paul?
I would say Field of Dreams is the perfect baseball movie, except for Kevin Costner's wife.
It stinks.
Movie. I did not like
Why didn't you like her? I thought she was great.
It stinks.
I think Field of Dreams is one of the best baseball movies.
I thought she was great in that. She went into the town meeting and really raised a ruckus. She was very supportive of his dreams. She let him go on the trip with James Earl Jones. Was it just her personality that rubbed you the wrong way?
Just her personality. That's it. Yep.
Limits? What did you think of the wife in Field of Dreams?
Yeah,
IT agrees.
Where do you put? Where do you, doesn't like her.
Where do you put Moneyball, Ray? Where do you put Moneyball?
Hold on. I got to get to the bottom of this, Paul. IT, why didn't you like Kevin Costner's wife?
I don't know. I honestly,
just
she kind of bugged me.
I didn't like the brother, the guy from the bank who was trying to take the field away from them.
Well, yeah, he was unlikable.
We
he
need
was
a villain
intentionally
in the movie.
Unlikable. He tried to take the field away, the house away. Of course we hated him.
And then he morphed into a five-year-old child, just incredibly amazed by everything that was going on the field once he saw it.
Yeah. I'm really...
Oh, how can you not like Burt Lancaster in that role? That's the greatest role, Burt Lancaster.
And then the father comes back to life and plays catch with the son as a young
man.
And Paul didn't eat. Paul wasn't moved at all.
Paul has mark for the movie.
Yeah, I'm really getting excited about a movie about a bunch of ghosts coming out of the cornfield. No. What about Moneyball, Ray? Did you like Moneyball?
I did, but not as much as The Natural or Field of Dreams.
I like The Natural a lot.
Best sports movie ever, Ray, is what?
Man,
And don't say Hoop Dreams. That's a documentary.
No. For me, Sandlot. I love The Sandlot.
Sandlot. You like that one, City Limits?
Yeah, The Sandlot's good.
I think it's overrated.
I don't think it's as good as Field of Dreams, though.
Paul, Sandlot?
Not bad. I like The Sandlot. I like Little Giants. You like Little Giants? That's another good little
It's hard to outdo the original Bad News Bears, by the way.
Bad News Bears is a great movie. Yeah. Varsity Blues is a great movie.
Major
the program,
League. Major
incredible.
League. Yeah.
The program is a great movie. Major League.
We started out the show with cliched topics to anger listeners.
Caddyshack.
Can we talk? Yes. Listen, why don't we do, since we talked about movies, we got Ray. He's about our age, so he probably. Ray. In honor, we didn't even talk about this yesterday, Joe, in honor of Donald Sutherland dying, what is your favorite Donald Sutherland movie?
Ordinary People.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm not a big fan of The Hunger Games. I know he was big in that.
Wait, was he in Ordinary People? He was the husband, right? City Limits wouldn't know about that. I'm sorry, Ray. Go ahead.
Yes, he was.
Donald Sutherland. How about Kiefer Sutherland? He was great in Stand By Me. Great character in Stand By Me. That's one of my favorite movies from the 80s.
All right, Ray.
How about...
Are you satisfied with that, Paul?
Well, I was going to say...
Follow up, please.
You almost forget that he was in this movie because it was... there were so many other things going on, but isn't the answer have to be Animal House?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't he the professor that gets it with one of the fraternity guys' girlfriends?
I don't even associate him with that.
I'm just saying.
Me neither.
When I was looking through his, you know, filmography, it's like, wow, he was in that movie. He was in that. It's like, that's right. He was in Animal House. So that has to be the right answer.
It might be. Powerful scene at the end of Ordinary People when it's him and his son, because the wife was traumatized by the events of their lives, and he had to get a divorce, and it's him and his son sitting on the porch. You remember that one, Ray? Ordinary People.
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Well, let's get to this then.
Before my time.
Paul, may I get to the official football part of this, or do you have another follow-up?
No, it's good.
Okay.
We're good.
On a scale of 1 to 5, Ray, 1 being I'm not surprised at all, to 5 being I'm stunned to the point where I need to sit down with a stiff drink. I want you to rate all these scenarios, okay? 1, okay. 1, you're not surprised at all. 5, you're beyond stunned. Justin Fields okay. beats out Russell Wilson in training camp.
Oh, 5.
Justin Fields is the starter by the bye week.
4.
Jaylen Warren becomes the primary ball toter.
2.
Dan Moore starts the opener.
Yeah, that's a 3.
Believing Nick Herbig is a starter ready to break out, the Steelers trade Alex Highsmith for a big-time receiver.
5.
Ooh. The Steelers win 12 games and the division.
4.
Justin Fields returns a kick like he apparently does in the new Madden game, City Limits was telling me.
5.
Thank you, Ray. I have no further questions. Boy, all was right, he guys. Great. Hey, he was great weekend. Today, wasn't he, Paul?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Ray.
Except for his love of the Field of Dreams.
What a man he is, huh, City Limits?
He's a man, awesome.
A
man of the
people. Field of Dreams.
I can't believe that IT piped up there. That was unbelievable. On, of all things for him to finally talk about, it's the wife in Field of Dreams.
People are also mentioning Miracle, Hoosiers, Caddyshack 2, Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. All the cliched ones, which is why we're angering people.
That's why.
That was the exact intent of this. All right, Paul. I'm going to ask you the exact same questions I just asked him. You and City Limits both next on all those scenarios for the Steelers. Let's do that next. It's the Joe Show with a man named Paul.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we're going to take a direct turn here, or as the case may be, a very large leap. It's time to talk a little Pogo Palooza with Will Weiner from X-Pogo. He's the CEO of X-Pogo. I had no idea, Will, that this event existed. I'm very excited for it. I had a pogo stick when I was little. I'm sure we all did. Paul, did you have a pogo stick when you were a kid?
I did, but I was never very good at it.
Well, these people are really good. And around Pittsburgh this weekend, it's the 20th year of Pogo Palooza, which was first held in a church parking lot in Lincoln, Nebraska, and the 10th time here in Pittsburgh. Will, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. Excited to chat with y'all today.
I don't even know what to ask. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen anybody do on a pogo stick? I guess what I want to see is Sunday, the best trick on the pogo stick. That's the competition. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen anybody do?
Yeah, I mean, it gets really ridiculous. So, you know, you mentioned, right, pogo sticks. Everybody remembers kind of their pogo stick you had in the garage. These are not those pogo sticks. They're souped up. They're air-powered. These guys have about 100 PSI of pressure in there, jumping 10 feet in the air. So, you know, the best trick gets wild. There's someone did a thing we call a 360 flip of faith. So they do a backflip off of the pogo stick, rotate 360 degrees in the air, land back on top of the pogo stick, all kind of in one motion, very graceful, very wild. It really is something I can describe. You can look at it online, but you really got to be there and kind of see it to believe it.
Paul, I can't believe we're doing pogo stick talk. This is unbelievable. I love this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is what we were surprised is this is the 20th year of this event. And I guess, you know, some of the nuts and bolts you should, you know, where are some of these things taking place? Is this outdoor, indoor? Is there, you know, do people have to buy tickets for this? Or, I mean, why don't you give us some of a little bit of the history of it and then also, you know, what the events are going to be this weekend?
Yeah, totally. So, and you know, 20 years ago started very small. It's still a very niche sport, but trying to grow this thing. So it's 3 days. Things are going to be kicking off tonight in Market Square, 5 p.m. With the high jump competition. So you asked the craziest thing I've ever seen. It probably is. This one athlete, Dalton Smith, jumped over a 12 feet high bar down there in Market Square a couple years back, landed bouncing on the other side. That's the world record. So we're trying to see if that gets
What's
broken
his name?
Tonight. Dalton Smith, also known as the man child.
Dalton Sniff? Like Sniffle? Schiff?
Yes. One who blacksmith, but yeah, I don't know.
Oh, Smith.
Dalton
okay.
Smith, yeah.
Dalton Smith, Paul. 12 feet. Could you do that?
No.
So, you know, that one is always pretty breathtaking and pretty, you know, you don't need any knowledge of pogo sticks or tricks. It's just like, wow, they're high in the air and hopefully they're landing from that high up. So that'll be tonight, 5 p.m. Market Square. Our group, X-Pogo, which works to grow this little fledgling sport of extreme pogo sticking, we're based in Wilkinsburg. So tomorrow and Sunday, we essentially have an obstacle course we build that these guys will fly around on these sticks, flipping over things, jumping on boxes, doing all kinds of tricks. That's 3 p.m. both days, Saturday and Sunday. The other one really like to emphasize, Sunday, the final event, is a kids 15 and under bounce off. So free, open for anyone 15 years and under can come. We'll have pogos you can use. We're going to say ready, set, go. Whoever stays pogoing the longest gets a free, essentially a kids version of the extreme stick. So that's always a lot of fun. Forgot to mention, everything is free all weekend. You know, like you mentioned, not a lot of people know about pogo, extreme pogo. So come on out, have fun. It'll be hot, but we'll have water and you'll get your mind blown.
Well, maybe we should get Crowley over there if they're inviting stick figures. Huh?
Yeah.
City limits?
I just think it's a good idea. He'd fit right in.
Or maybe somebody can use Crowley as a pogo stick.
Can you
and
tell
jump
the difference
Crowley.
Between
yeah.
Crowley and the pogo stick?
It'd be unbelievable. So who's the most famous pogo sticker of all time?
You know, you got some great names out there. I mentioned Dalton Smith, Dan Mahoney from Nova Scotia. Many consider him the GOAT. Henry Cabellas, who's competing this weekend, kind of the best active guy. I think he holds like 8 world records. Our version of Paul Skeens, if you will, this kid from New Brunswick, Canada, Duncan Murray, 22 years old, just set the world record yesterday for the longest forward jump at 23 feet, 5.5 inches. So he's kind of a dark horse. So, you know, they've got a couple followers on Instagram, but, you know, no one may know these guys outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Is this a sport? You called it a fledgling sport, but is it a growing sport? Is it like, you know, for a while skateboarding got really big? Is it growing like that or what?
We're trying as much. I think what's interesting about pogo, as opposed to a lot of other action sports, right, is skateboarding, BMX, all that. You're moving right to left, kind of on that plane. Pogo, you're going up and down. And the potential for injury and risk and just kind of craziness is very high. Also, the potential for just kind of these amazing acrobatic feats 10 feet in the air. There's nothing like it. But it makes it a little difficult to enter where, you know, the pogos are kind of expensive, all that. We've kind of released a new kids version, so we're hoping to get it to grow. But if you look over these past 20 years, you know, it definitely started with 5 people in a church parking lot from Nebraska. We'll have about 30 competitors this year from across the world. You know, there are hundreds of devoted extreme pogo enthusiasts. Hopefully in a decade we'll be in the X Games. So it is kind of this wild thing where you can come here and you can see the people who are the best in the world at what they do. You can see Guinness World Records. You can see flips and all this stuff. And it's really kind of just, you know, 30 of us super obsessed with pogo sticks, making it all happen for our and the people of Pittsburgh's enjoyment.
Will, we appreciate the time, man. Good luck with the event. It's called Pogo Palooza. Anybody who wants to find out about it can go to pogopalooza.com, happening all weekend for free around Pittsburgh. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate y'all having us. It will be an increasingly time.
There we go. How about that?
How about that, City Limits?
He loves the show.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills.
How about that? Would you ever do that? Would you ever try and jump 12 feet in the air on a pogo stick?
No.
That's kind of crazy,
isn't it? I can't do any of that X Games stuff.
You know, one thing, I'll tell you, it's funny. We have a lot of these kinds of things go on here in Pittsburgh that people don't even know about. And I'll give you a great example. I know for at least like a 10 or 12 year period, the World Pinball Championship took place in Carnegie.
Really?
Yeah, down in Carnegie. And the reason I know that, I was a cab driver for a bunch of 15 years. I drove a cab, and you know, when you go to the airport, you get in line. So when it's your turn, you're up at the curb. Whoever comes out, you get. So the one year I was getting all these people that were going to, like, right to Carnegie.
Yeah.
And there or hotels right around Carnegie. So I was like, what is going on? And someone explained to me. Believe it or not, in somewhere it's right down in Carnegie, right off the main drag. If you keep going down, there's a warehouse kind of place that has like hundreds of pinball machines.
I never knew that.
And they have, but they don't, it's not like a place you can go and play pinball. They only have like big competitions, like the world championships, the U.S. championships, the state, like it literally opens like five times a year or something for these major events.
Is pinball a sport?
No. I mean, I don't know. It might be. I think we could argue that, maybe. The only thing about that is I bet you if you talk to somebody who's a real serious pinballer, they would tell you there's a strategy to it. But
wait, you said earlier that poker is a sport.
Yes.
It can't be a sport. It's a game.
What?
Poker.
Poker's a sport.
There's no athletic ability involved whatsoever.
If you play it at the highest level, there's a lot of that goes into it if you play it at the highest level. Again, when we talk about it, you know, recreationally, you know, baseball, when you just play with your buddies, it's different than playing at the highest level. I say playing at the highest level, there's a lot that goes into it. Yes.
I believe that, but there's no way it's a sport.
It
City
is.
Limits.
Endurance is part of it. Endurance for poker?
Is chess a sport?
That's why you see in like the World Series of Poker, for the most part, the big events, they're all won by the younger guys.
What about a spelling bee then? You got to withstand it for 3 days.
It takes endurance.
Endurance, right? I can think of other things that take endurance. Unbelievable, City Limits.
It's not a sport. It's
competition.
So is air guitar.
I'm telling you, as somebody who plays poker, it is definitely a sport.
That's an unbelievable take.
So that's a hot competition.
What about air guitar competition?
No, that's not.
How? Singing competition.
No, that's not. Because
what about math problems?
Okay, let's just now become so ridiculous that this conversation.
No, the ridiculous part is that poker is a sport.
It absolutely is a sport. And the thing about it is, it's not just it's the competitive part of it. There's a strategy to it that you absolutely better have a strategy. And I'm telling
Monopoly
you,
has
when
a
you
strategy.
Play when you play it at the highest levels, right? The ability to continue to play. What is going on here with my computer now? The ability to play, you know, 2, 3, 4 days in a row. That's an endurance part of it. And I'll give you a great example. Okay, that's the endurance part of it. I always used to be of the opinion that NASCAR drivers weren't athletes.
Yeah.
Until I did the Richard Petty driving experience and sat in a car. It was only for 4 laps. All it took was that for me to say, these guys, not only are these guys athletes, these are some of the premier athletes on the planet. to be able to go 4.5, 5 hours, whatever, however long those races are, at 200 miles an hour, in, you know, with all the noise, the heat, the smells.
You can make a better argument for that than poker players, I think. This guy's putting one-handed. Did you see that? Anyway, we have to run. Bechtold's breakdown. Tease to it, Bechtold.
What is going on?
We have an ode to Willie Mays, and we also have a couple of other things that were stealing the headlines this week, including City Connect weekend and one of the most memorable days in sports history that was earlier.
You know what we have?
Thank you, Wonder Twin.
You know what I have? A computer that's... Anyway, go ahead.
50-minute mark on the fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Bob Walk coming up, batting leadoff in the 1 o'clock hour as we wind down the week.